I came across a story from a book by Ray Stedman, and it said this: jazz pianist George Shearing was blind from birth. The composer of more than 300 pieces, Shearing toured continually throughout his long career. He could often be found in busy downtown areas, navigating crowded sidewalks with his dark glasses and white cane. On one occasion, he was at a busy intersection at rush hour, waiting for help in crossing the street. Finally, someone tapped him on the shoulder. What Shearing heard next was not an offer for help, but a request. "Excuse me, sir," a stranger said to Shearing. "Would you mind helping a blind man cross the street?" Shearing was about to tell the other man that he too was blind. Then he thought, why not give it a go? So Shearing said, "Certainly, my friend, here, take my arm." The two men set off across the street together, the blind leading the blind. Shearing heard many unnerving sounds as they crossed the street: tires squealing, horns blaring, the angry voices of cab drivers, but they made it safely to the far curb. Later, Shearing recalled the incident and said, "I'll never do it again, but I'm glad I did it once. It was the biggest thrill of my life." Not a good idea for the blind to lead the blind. Now, where we ended last week was from one perspective, a low spot in Jesus' earthly ministry. Now, when I say that, we need to understand that Jesus was not taken by surprise. Everything was still going according to plan. But from our perspective, this was a low spot. This was a low spot for the disciples of Jesus. The disciples had just recently spent several months with Jesus, mostly alone with Jesus. He had been teaching them. He had been preparing them for some really hard and really important things that were coming and are coming soon. And yet it seems like they are not comprehending anything. It seems like everything Jesus is saying to them is just going right over their heads. Now, Jesus asked them, in the verses that we just read, he asked them a bunch of questions without giving them time to answer, as a way of trying to get across to them the seriousness of this situation. So there in Mark 8, we looked at these verses last Sunday, and beginning in the second half of verse 17, Jesus says to his disciples, "Do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember?" Now Jesus is trying to get across to them that their spiritual vision and understanding is very lacking. Jesus has given them a very important warning about false teachers and false teaching and false beliefs of the Pharisees and the Herodians. But all they could think about was their stomachs. Because they were on a trip, they forgot to bring bread. Now this is a concern because these disciples were to be the apostles. These disciples were to be the ones to carry on the ministry after Jesus left. And very soon, Jesus would be leaving. Very soon, Jesus would not be there to physically and visibly lead them by the hand every step of the way. They needed to become the new leaders in the spread of the gospel. They needed to be the leaders in the growth of God's kingdom. They would be the leaders of Christianity. But as it was right then, it would be the blind leading the blind. Well, that might have been a fun adventure for a little while, but it would have ended in disaster. These disciples need to be ready. They need to begin to comprehend some of these very important things that Jesus is trying to teach them about himself. So maybe one more miracle. Maybe one more miracle will do it. Maybe that will finally confirm to them who Jesus really is. I remember that barrage of questions that Jesus asked his disciples came right after the miraculous feeding of the 4,000. And we pointed out how Matthew says that there was 4,000 men, there were women and children also, so it was more than 4,000. It was a huge crowd of people. Jesus miraculously fed them with 7 loaves of bread. And this came the same day or the day after. That they didn't even think about it, of how Jesus miraculously fed those people. They had seen all kinds of miracles. It wasn't just that one. That one would have been amazing in itself, but they'd seen hundreds of miracles that Jesus had done. Jesus had even given them the authority and the ability to do miracles. I pointed out last week, no matter how amazing the miracles are, if someone is determined to not believe what God has revealed, miracles aren't going to change that. So what about the disciples? Is anything going to change here? Okay, well, let's look, this next miracle, see if there's anything different this time. This miracle begins, Mark chapter 8, verse 22. It says, and they came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to Jesus and implored him to touch him. Now, we have come across the name of this town before in Mark, Bethsaida. It was near here where Jesus miraculously fed the 5,000. And there too, it wasn't just 5,000. It was 5,000 men plus women and children. 15,000, some say 20, some say 25,000 may have been there that day. And Jesus miraculously fed them with the lunch of one little boy. We're going to come back to the significance of that in a little while. But this town, Bethsaida, is on the north side of the Sea of Galilee, kind of to the northeast. It is in the region of Galilee, but just barely. This is in the land of Israel still, but just barely. Jesus has been there before. Jesus has apparently spent a fair amount of time there, we'll see later. On John chapter 1, verse 44, we learn that Philip, Andrew, and Peter were all originally from Bethsaida. And they likely still had family, friends there. So Jesus is still in a mode of trying to stay undetected, keep things relatively quiet, lay low, not draw crowds. But going to Bethsaida, where everybody knew him, everybody knew at least some of his disciples, going completely unnoticed was probably not possible. And he didn't go completely unnoticed. There was apparently a small group of people found Jesus. They brought to him a blind man. They beg him, just touch him. Just touch this man, and he'll be made well. So it was their expectation. From what they thought they knew about Jesus, well, this is how it works. This is all it would take. Jesus just needs to touch him, and he would be healed. Now that's, when you think about it, actually a pretty amazing level of faith. Especially considering the way things were in the first century. That they would bring a blind man to Jesus and say, just touch him. Beg him to touch him, and he'll be healed. That's a lot of faith. Now today, if someone has a health problem, there is an expectation, or at least a hope, that there will be a medical solution. I've told you recently, my mom, she had poor vision for decades. She's had to wear pretty thick glasses ever since she was 5 years old. She's been at the level of being legally blind for at least the past few years. So she had surgery on her eyes the past couple of weeks, and she no longer needs to wear glasses. except for reading. She has to have reading glasses, but just the, you know, the cheap kind you can buy anywhere. She needs them for reading, but that's it. That's amazing that that's possible. And there are all kinds of surgeries, medications, and treatments that can cure a lot of things. Now, obviously, it doesn't always work. Sometimes things can even be made worse, but it's amazing what can be done in this day and age. What's really amazing to think about is that this has only been the case for about the past 150 or 200 years. Before that, these kinds of operations, medications, and treatments weren't options. 2,000 years ago, the best medical advice that was ever given to someone who is in a situation like my mom was in would have been, take some blood of a rooster, mix it with honey, and rub it on your eyes. And that is an actual prescription given by doctors 2,000 years ago to people who were suffering with blindness. Rooster blood and honey. Rub it in your eyes. Diseases were more common then. I wonder why. We may think that it seems like so many sick people. It was much more the case 2,000 years ago. They didn't know the reasons for things like blindness. They hadn't discovered the causes. They hadn't learned how to prevent it. They hadn't learned how to treat it or cure it at that time. There were a lot of sick people. There were a lot of blind people. Now, there were people who would get some common illnesses and they would eventually get better. But there were a lot of people. If you get sick, you're going to be sick. And then there's Jesus. And suddenly, there's hope. Suddenly, there are people who have been severely sick and deaf or blind, and they're being instantly cured. That hadn't happened before. This little group of people, they're confident that if Jesus just touches this blind guy, he'll be able to see. There'd never been anything like that before. Well, Jesus didn't do this according to their expectations. He did have compassion on this man. He was going to help him out. He was going to heal him. But not in the way they demanded. He's going to do it in a different way than he's done before. Look at verse 23. Taking the blind man by the hand, he brought him out of the village. And after spitting on his eyes and laying his hands on him, he asked him, "Do you see anything?" It's unexpected. A couple weeks ago, we looked at a passage in Mark chapter 7. Jesus healed a deaf and mute man. And in that case, Jesus put his fingers in the man's ears. Then he spit on one of his fingers, and he touched the man's tongue. And we would maybe like to know, why did he do that? Why did he choose to use that method to heal that man? And the best answer I could give to that is, I don't know. Now, as a blind man, Jesus spits in his eyes. And we might like to know why. We know Jesus can heal in any way he chooses. He could do anything to heal this man. Why did he do it like this? Well, again, I don't know. Seems like I've been giving that as an answer a lot lately. I don't know. I would like to know, but I don't know. One thing I would like to say, however, is if I would ever happen to go blind, please remember you are not Jesus. Please don't spit on me. Only Jesus gets to do that. It would only help if Jesus did it. That's different how Jesus chose to heal this man. Something else that's very different about this, this is the only time, I believe, if I remember right, that Jesus ever seems to be asking a recipient of his miracle, did it work? He asked him, do you see anything? It's different because this is the only time that it seems like when Jesus does a miracle, it kind of worked, but not real well. Verse 24 says, and he looked up and said, I see men, for I see them like trees walking around. Now what he was seeing was probably the disciples. Jesus, this blind man, the disciples, they went out of the village, they were out there by themselves. He sees some men moving around, probably the disciples. The disciples are probably trying to get a better look because this is strange to them too. They haven't seen Jesus do this before. This guy can see them, but not real well. Now either this guy used to be able to see and became blind later in life so that he knows what trees look like. That's certainly possible. Or it could be he's never been able to see and he knew what trees should look like from what they felt like. Now, they're kind of tall and narrow. They can be kind of fuzzy. And I think what he means by what he's saying is, well, I can kind of see. His vision was blurry. Now keep in mind, he'd been completely blind. And now he can see blurry images of people. Then we see this in verse 25. Then again, he laid his hands on his eyes. And he looked intently and was restored and began to see everything clearly. Now here again, I think we might want to know why. Why a two-stage miracle? Why doesn't it seem like it completely worked the first time? Now here again, I'd have to answer, I don't know. I'm not sure why it happened this way. Few things we can be sure of. We know that it is not because Jesus didn't know how to restore his sight all at once. We can know for sure it's not that he didn't have the power to do it all at once. We know that he didn't make a mistake and get it right the second time. And Jesus is the creator of the universe. He's God. He has all power available to him. He could have healed this guy all at once. For some reason, he didn't. Why? I don't know. Maybe it was intentional to use this as an illustration for the learning of the disciples. And that's a possibility that we're going to look at more soon. Beyond that, it doesn't say. Why did it happen like this? We don't know. Any answers we give, we're speculating because it doesn't say. So I don't know why Jesus did it like this, but he miraculously gave a blind man perfect vision. And that's amazing. Verse 26. He sent him to his home, saying, do not even enter the village. Why? Again, we could ask why. Why was he just supposed to go home? Why was he not to go into the village? Well, this statement here is reflective of the greater context that this miracle happened in. I said earlier that Bethsaida was just barely in Galilee. Jesus is once again on his way out of Galilee. He's headed north into another Gentile region. He and his disciples had just spent the last several months in a Gentile region. And Jesus had left Galilee before, partly because of the conflict with the Pharisees heating up. Now Jesus and his disciples were not ready for that. Jesus wanted to get away from that conflict, spend some time training his disciples, because this growing animosity from the Pharisees is indicative of where we are in Jesus' public ministry. His time on earth. We are getting closer to the cross. The hatred of Jesus is growing among the Jews. Especially those who are in positions of power. Jesus came presenting himself to the Jews as the Messiah. But the Jews are turning more and more against him. After being away from Galilee for those several months, Jesus finally came back. But as soon as he got off the boat and set his foot on the land back in the middle of Galilee, the Pharisees are there waiting for him, ready to argue with him, to put Jesus in his place. And they demand from him a sign so that they thought he had to prove himself. He hasn't done that yet. He's got to prove who he says he is. Give us a sign. You remember Jesus' answer about that? Verse 12, chapter 8. Sighing deeply in his spirit, he said, "Why does this generation seek for a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation." In that statement, the judgment for their rejection has begun. Verse 13 says, "Leaving them, he again embarked and went away to the other side." And when it says, "leaving them," Jesus was leaving them. He's leaving Galilee. His ministry in Galilee is done. This miracle that happens in Bethsaida would be the last miracle done in Galilee. And it's just barely in Galilee. Jesus does this on his way out. He takes this man out of the village, off by himself, just him and his disciples. But after he heals him, he tells him, "Go to your home, do not enter the village." Galilee is not getting any more signs from Jesus. He's on his way out. A while later, Jesus says this about this town of Bethsaida and the surrounding region. It's recorded in Luke chapter 10 and verses 13 through 15. "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the miracles had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, which occurred in you, they would have repented long ago, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. But it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You will be brought down to Hades." Now, we've recently read of all of these towns that he mentions there in Luke chapter 10. Jesus had just recently been in Tyre and Sidon. As far as we know, the casting out of that demon from that little girl is the only miracle or display of power that Jesus did while he was in the region of Tyre. As far as we know, he didn't do any miracles in Sidon. In Galilee, in and near the towns of Chorazin and Bethsaida and Capernaum, Jesus had done all kinds of miracles, hundreds of miracles, including the feeding of the 5,000. That happened somewhere near Bethsaida. So practically everyone from around there had personal experience with Jesus' miracles. And still, very few of them had actually repented and trusted in Jesus to save them from their sins. Very few of them were looking to Jesus as the Messiah that he intended to be. So many of them just wanted more signs. Just give us more free stuff. You remember when John the Baptist, he was in prison, he sent some of his disciples to Jesus to find out for sure if he was the Messiah. He thought he was. He had proclaimed that he was. He just wanted to be sure. Jesus responded to John the Baptist's disciples, "Go and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight. The lame walk. The lepers are cleansed. The deaf hear. The dead are raised up. And the poor have the gospel preached to them." It's Matthew 11 verses 4 and 5. Now, Jesus was quoting to them from prophecies in Isaiah about what would be true of the coming Messiah. So if anyone really wanted to know who Jesus was, all they really had to do was look at God's word. Believe what it says and look at Jesus. He perfectly fulfilled those prophecies. The people of Israel had no excuse. especially the teachers of the law, like the Pharisees, they had no excuse. They've been told. God told them through the prophets who the Messiah would be, what would be true of him when he came. They've been shown through Jesus doing these miracles. They saw with their own eyes exactly who Jesus is. So the only reason they didn't believe in him was because they didn't want to believe in him. But Jesus wasn't going to give them any more signs. It's like casting pearls before swine. They weren't getting no more. That's one of the things that's so significant about this miracle here in Mark chapter 8. It was private. It was kept quiet. And it's the last one that will happen in Galilee. Jesus did it on his way out. Now from here, Jesus is going to be more intentional, even more intentional, about training his disciples and preparing them to become the leaders of Christianity. Preparing them to be the ones who would take on the preaching of the gospel, the advancement of God's kingdom. It's going to come very soon when Jesus is going to right out tell his disciples that he is going to die. And they're not going to get it at first. They're going to argue with him about it. Then they're going to ignore it for a while. But it's going to happen. Jesus is going to die and is coming soon. Now think back again to where the disciples are in their understanding right now. Back again in verses 17 and 18, do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? Do you not remember? Then there's this miracle in Bethsaida. The next thing we're going to see after this, so we plan to look at it next week, is Peter's confession of who Jesus really is. Comes in verse 29. But who do you say that I am? Peter answered and said to him, you are the Christ. Now, previous to this, there have been some demons who have made that confession about Jesus in Mark. But no other person has. Peter makes this statement, you are the Christ. Well, it seems like they're finally getting it. Finally, now, after this miracle, somehow finally, they're getting it. And we all know the song, Amazing Grace. We all sing, as we sing that hymn, I was blind, but now I see. And I hope that's true of everyone here today. I hope that all of our blind eyes have been opened. And we can now see the amazing grace shown to us through Jesus Christ. But, how well can you see? You were blind, and through Christ now you see. But how well do you see? Now just after Peter makes this great confession about who Jesus is, that he is the Christ, Jesus goes on to teach them some things about his death on the cross. And Peter argues with him about it. Jesus says to Peter, who had just made the confession, you are the Christ, he says to Peter, get behind me, Satan. So it seems that Peter had been blind, now he can see, but not very well at this point. His spiritual vision is still blurry. And just maybe this miracle happened when it did, where it did, the way it did, as an illustration of how spiritual sight works. I once was blind, but now I see, but not perfectly. The disciples had a ways to go, and so do we. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul is looking ahead, the glories of heaven, the hope of eternity. He says in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12, for now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully
just as I also have been fully known. Now, you may be sitting in a position where you think to yourself, you know, I just don't have all the answers. The things I'd like to know, things that people ask me about, and I don't know. I have to answer a lot of times, I don't know. If you don't perfectly understand everything when you read your Bible, if there are times when you wonder, why does God do things the way He does them? If there are still things about God and His grace that seem confusing, as evidenced by Sunday school this morning, that can happen. Welcome to the club. We're all in that same boat. But the day will come when we all will see clearly. If you have been saved by grace through faith in Jesus Christ, when we get to heaven, you will be able to look back and it will all make sense. Not being able to understand everything right now doesn't mean salvation didn't work. It just means we haven't gotten to the conclusion of it yet. God is working in us, even now. He's teaching us. He's giving us clearer sight day by day. Every circumstance we go through, God teaches us through it. Every time we read and study His Word, our sight should be getting a little bit better. Every time we celebrate communion, our understanding of Jesus Christ and what He accomplished for us on the cross should be getting a little clearer. Your sight is not perfect because you're still here. Look for that day of Christ's return and everything will become clear.